formal and open, and besides getting briefings by both DEC and Exxon, all the various committees come in and give their briefings. It's a chance for some of the people who work out in the field to come in and make the presentations as well. I know last time we had the two gentlemen from Exxon who run the task forces come in and tell where each of them were and what they were doing. Admiral Robbins has just now arrived. It's a small room. Last week I counted some 70 people in the room. There are only 31 chairs, and we already have about 15 or 20 standing around the sides of the room. And you can hear the crowd that's approaching. It usually starts at 7 when they were meeting three times a week over at DEC. Everybody showed up right at time, but there were so many ongoing things they didn't want to talk about them that often, and sometimes the meeting only lasted for 10 minutes. This last time, last week, we were here for 2 hours, and there's a lot of information that's passed along. I've left little notes on the table telling them that this is broadcast live and that they should speak into the microphone, so hopefully we won't have as much off-mic sound tonight as we did last time. Also, I commandeered an employee of Exxon's in the Data Coordination Center to ride herd on the sound system mixer tonight. We have increased the number of mics. Actually, we doubled the number of mics. We had 2 in here last time, and now we've got about 4, so hopefully if we can keep only the one open to which someone is speaking, we can get some of the extraneous noise cut out.
I can hear you.
Oh, good. And your name is?
Mike.
Mike's the one who's going to be running herd on the sound system for us tonight, so.
I'm the one you can blame.
There we go. I haven't seen Steve Provant walk in yet. He's the state on-scene coordinator for DEC. But there is, no, that's not the wrong person. I'm trying to read the tags and to determine who works for which agency here for some of the ones that I don't recognize. At the head table, we have representatives from Exxon, Coast Guard, Cordova, District Fishermen's United, DEC. Bob Benda is up there for DEC. He's the Shoreline, Interagency Shoreline Cleanup Committee representative for DEC.
Okay, let's get started.
Here's Admiral Robbins.
They've asked us to identify ourselves when they speak. Feet of boom in place, 128,000.
Gulf of Alaska, pretty much evenly split. Looking at the progress for yesterday, 5.4 miles in the sound. We've averaged about 5 miles a day, which is a considerable increase over the last several weeks. And another mile in the Gulf of Alaska for a total of 6.4 miles. Total miles treated by Exxon are 600 miles. 149 of that is in Prince William Sound, 466 in the Gulf of Alaska. Landing craft deployed a total of 51. That includes three that have been deployed in the Seward Homer area with Hot Water Washington. 25 barges and 20 berthing vessels. Oil recovered from skimmer activity over the last week, 601 barrels total, 30 of that yesterday. Total for the project, 10,847. The next chart in your handout shows the daily progress by Exxon and the total miles that I just quoted for yesterday. Let's move now to Prince William Sound shoreline activities. We'll cover that as we did last week. Let me make a few comments about the overall accomplishments and any issues for the upcoming week. As we mentioned last week, approval and wide-scale use of core exit and bioremediation are extremely important to us in completion of the project. We would hope for that in the no later than the first week in August. Same statement that we made last week. That means by the end of next week, we hope to be using both if the proper approvals are obtained. And we'll have a special topic by Exxon following the operations report to discuss current progress on that in more depth. A few other highlights from operations. Formation of our Task Force 6 has now occurred. Work commenced in the Crafton Island area beginning yesterday. We received U.S. Coast Guard and ADAC demobilization approval on 34 shoreline segments in Prince William Sound for the last 5 days. And Task Force 1 received approval on the last segment on Shelter Bay in Evans Island, so we've now completed demobilization of Shelter Bay. Our near-term focus over the next week, again, maintaining a high emphasis on safety with all of our field supervisors, to complete deployment plans for Special Cleanup Team 3, which will be a part of Task Force 6. Continue our emphasis on preventing escape of any oil or sheen from shoreline cleanup operations, and continue our planning on strategy for treating the remaining oil shoreline in Prince William Sound. With those highlights, let me now turn it over to our two task force coordinators for the Prince William Sound area, Bill Stillings and Wayne Boskamp, to go into our status in more detail.
My name is Wayne Boskamp. I'm coordinator for task forces 1, 2, and 6. I plan to talk about what's been happening in those task forces and then turn things over to Bill Stillings, who will cover recent events in Task Forces 3, 4, and 5. Taking Task Force 1 first, which has been recently located on Evans Island in the Shelter Bay area. As Bill mentioned, progress has been good in the Shelter Bay area this week with something a little over 12,000 yards of shoreline treated, 14 segments approved for demobilization. Shelter Bay has now been completed, and the task force at this time has moved around this point and is working southward along the eastern edge of Evans Island. The next area of deployment, which will be starting tomorrow, is to also move toward Fleming Island and begin work in that area, and as the next several days unfold, to work southward throughout the whole southern sector of the Sound. Taking Task Force 2 next, which for a considerable amount of time has been located in the Upper Passage. Glad to note that work in the Upper Passage has been completed. This task force recently relocated to the Lower Passage to continue work in that area. So if you're out looking for the USS Ogden or the Corinthian, at this point you will find them in the Lower Passage. Task Force 2 will continue Lower Passage area segment working for the next several days. Our newest task force, Task Force 6, has recently begun operation. It's located in the area, point two berthing vessels, the new St. Thomas berthing barge, and also recently added to that unit is the FOSS 280. Currently strapped to that barge, they're anchored together and serve as a housing nucleus for this new task force. The fourth Maxi Omni barge unit arrived over there today. They also have three landing craft with three more to come soon. There's about 400 people or so now moved in associated with this task force. Their initial area of work will be the Crafton Island area. Also, we plan to have a special cleanup team associated with this group, the Setnetters Association. We're currently gearing up with a group of approximately 25 people who will form a team of their own, utilizing several of their own skiffs and other boats, and will be a part of Task Force 6 deployed to the General Shawnee Bay areas, north and south, as this task force begins work. That's a summary for those three task force. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Bill Stillings, and after that, we'd be glad to take questions.
Thank you, Wayne. My name is Bill Stillings. I'm coordinator for 3, 4, and 5. As 3 has been in the Herring Bay area for a good long time, they have begun to make good progress as they have worked up the east shore in through here. They've had several segments completed this week and signed off. They're now working mainly down in the Soft Cove area, the 5000 series of segments down in this area. And we're really looking for them to complete in the Herring Bay area in the next few weeks. Plans are to move them down around into the Snug Harbor area and begin working Snug Harbor north toward Bay Isles until we can get the timing to work down toward Point Helen. Task Force 4, of course, continues in Northwest Bay. As we have examined their workload and the length of time we have left, we have decided to give them the Eleanor 109 segment, which is the bay here on the south side, which is a heavily contaminated area, and they will begin working in there in that area and should continue here for the next considerable period of time. Task Force 5, as they have come out of the more heavily contaminated areas up in this section of Night Island, have begun moving down into the lower islands that stretch along the west side of Night Island. They're finding fairly light contamination throughout this area, and this is where the really considerable yardages have begun to occur over the last week, turning in size 17,000 yards in one day down here, where really they're finding light pickup, shovel work, that type of thing, manual cleanup over a large area. And the Coast Guard demobilization approvals have been coming in to confirm. They're currently working down in the Squire area, down in through here, and we expect they'll be finished up in this area in the next few days. They'll be moving over to Chenega and begin the work here on Chenega, and we're now planning to give them the area of northern Chenega, which is the more heavily contaminated areas. So Task Force 5 will probably assume this responsibility rather than 6, like we maybe had originally considered. They will be over here then for the next several weeks. Any questions we can answer at this time? Okay, thank you.
Okay, at this point, the handouts, pages 6 through 10, show the same map for deployment that we just discussed. Let me introduce Ken Lewis. Ken is our coordinator in Valdez for Gulf of Alaska activities, who will cover Gulf of Alaska status.
Thank you. Good evening. I'd like to review three areas with you tonight, the Homer, Seward, and Kodiak areas in the Gulf, starting with the Kodiak area. We had over 560 people working during the week and made reasonable progress, and we treated over 26 miles. Significantly, we had two new berthing vessels arrive in the area, and these will be deployed quite quickly. They were needed. A large amount of staff work and also operating work was spent during the week on it, establishing where we are now, how many miles have been treated, how many miles are ahead of us, and what's the best way to do it. And we think that the revised work plan is solid, and logistically we're capable of handling it. Some of the near-term activities in the Kodiak area, we'll be deploying two more teams down in that area immediately. We'll be updating the work plans and implementing those, and they will really see us out towards the end of next month. And we will start preparing for cleaning in this area here, down the southern portion of the Alaskan Peninsula. The most difficult part of that area is the logistics. However, we think that we have that well worked, and that will be a major part of the Kodiak area. On the island itself, majority of that work is now done. Now looking at the Homer area, we had over 200 people working in that area, and most of the work was concentrated on areas that had been slightly re-oiled. We have set up to now start work in the Barron Islands, which is a difficult area to work. Two teams have already arrived there. The first thing we did was to set up the emergency procedures, emergency shelters, to ensure that our people will work safely. The objective is to have our people there as little time as possible. We will build up to about 45 people in that area. Now looking at the other area, which is Seward. We also have developed revised plans for the Seward area, much along the lines I previously explained. Where are we now? What's the best way to go ahead? What are the best choices? We're satisfied that we have solid plans. Most of the week in Seward was spent cleaning areas that had been slightly re-oiled, and we had around 120 people working on this. In the near-term activities, we have a group of people training on hot water washing in the Morning Cove area, which is new to the Seward area, and these are landing units mounted on landing craft. We did today sit down with Admiral Robbins and review a brief summary of the revised work plans for those three areas. To summarize those, and that is, we measured where we are, what has to be done, how we could catch up with approval on demobilization of the areas that we have already worked on, especially the Kodiak area, which is a large, logistically difficult area to work. And I think we have good coordination with the Coast Guard to achieve that. So I think we're going to make excellent progress over the next 2 weeks. I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Okay, Bob Goodrich will now cover our waste management and environmental report.
I'm going to cover two highlights tonight, sanitary waste and oily solid waste. On the first topic, sanitary wastewaters, we'd like to say to the Admiral, Coast Guard, ADEC, and EPA, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now that we can treat the sewage offshore and discharge it out there, it's going to greatly have an impact on the logistics out there of managing this tough problem, and also have a very favorable impact on the city of Valdez. As you, some may know, that they've had a few problems out at the city sewage treatment plant with odors, and this will significantly reduce the loading on the city. And thereby minimize potential for these odor problems in the future. So thank you all again on that one.
I'd like to say that we're not discharging sewage.
Well, it's treated, very effectively treated sewage in a specially constructed advanced treatment lagoon barge. On the second topic, we continue to be behind on disposing of the oily solid waste. You can see the chart that's attached. We're still behind by about 1,500 to 2,000 tons, and that does not include the oily logs. So we continue to encourage ADEC to consider giving us permits to burn on those barge mount incinerators, and also approvals to employ controlled log burning on those oiled logs, particularly in the Homer area. That's all I had. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Thank you.
The remainder of our operations status handout are the details of oil spill recovery equipment in terms of skimmers, and also boom deployment. I don't plan on going over those. I'd already mentioned the summary numbers. That concludes our operations report. Before we go into our next special topic, let me ask if there are any other questions or comments on overall operations. If not, let me introduce Bob Estracchio, our technical manager.
I'd like to follow up on two topics that we discussed last week, letting everyone know where we stand on two important initiatives to enhance Exxon's capability to treat oil-impacted shorelines. On the first one, John Wilkinson, who's with Exxon's research company in New Jersey, will provide a rundown on yesterday's test of a shoreline cleaning chemical agent, which we call reformulated 9580, if you can remember that. Then Fred Kaiser, also from our New Jersey research affiliate, will discuss our plans to apply bioremediation here in Prince William Sound and also in the Gulf of Alaska. As a matter of interest, the Homer Shoreline Committee has strongly endorsed bioremediation for a number of oil beach segments in the Kenai Peninsula area. This was documented in a letter from Dexter Chan to the federal on-site commander. So with that, I'd like to have John Wilkinson start with the test that was conducted yesterday out of Disk Island.
Thank you, Bob. Before I get into the test itself, I thought I might take a minute and describe the chemical to you. Bob said it's a reformulated version of one of our oil spill chemicals, 9580. This one's specially reformulated for shoreline cleanup. It's formulated to dissolve the crude oil and then lift it off the beach, but it's specially designed not to disperse the oil into the water column, but allow it to be recovered. Yesterday, we did a full-scale test of a 100-foot section of beach on Disk Island. An adjacent beach was done a week ago, so we could provide a reference to what we're doing yesterday. A substantial amount of water quality and biomonitoring information and analytical is being done. We expect those results within a week. I'm happy to report that the initial qualitative results and observations are very positive. It appeared to work very well in cleaning the beach. We had two very experienced shoreline supervisors with us. They both indicated that they had never seen a beach clean so quickly, and in their judgment, we would get substantial increase in both beach cleanliness and in productivity. I also have to admit that there were a few patches that weren't done as well as others, and part of our test was really to look at our ability and technique in cleaning, to look at how we applied the chemical and to look at how we washed. There were some particularly steep sections of this beach, and we found that the techniques that we had thought of did not work that well on a steep beach with the tide especially chasing us up. We went from low to high tide. So we'll have to go back and rework our application techniques, but we think that's easily achievable. Now, recognizing the variability in oiling on beach to beach, we still took time to try and estimate how much oil we recovered on each beach and making comparisons. And it appears that on the test beach, we are recovering more oil per square foot than on a reference beach. And it's important to note that the oil we recovered is not the typical mousse that you've been seeing in recovery operations. It wasn't brown.
It didn't appear to have a lot of oil and kelp in it. Instead, it was pretty black, more like we'd expect the crude oil itself to look. And the volumes we recovered, we feel, are mostly oil and not water. The analytical we'll get next week will confirm that, we hope. We also feel it was a pretty tough test. Anyone who came out yesterday saw that it was raining all day. Beach cleaning chemicals have been reported to not work that well in rain. In light rain, we think it'll work fine. We had at least light, if not medium rain all day. And we feel if it worked yesterday, it'll work pretty much all the time for us. And based on these results, we are gearing up to apply the chemical, and we hope as soon as we have approval to go ahead with it. Any questions?
Did you, this is Clyde Robbins, were you able to skim it? There was some question that I heard, although I wasn't out there yesterday, that there was that you didn't attempt to skim it. Is that true?
No, sir. We had a Navy skimmer on there at the end of the day, and we skimmed the oil. There's no problem with it.
And how much did you recover, do you know?
In the skimmer itself, we recovered a little bit over 100 gallons. And for the size of beach we did versus the reference beach, that was a reasonable amount of oil to skim for the oiling involved.
Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. My name is Ray Morris. I'm the assistant on-scene coordinator. Steve Provand is not available this evening. His helicopter is still en route. Is Steve here? There he is.
He's hiding.
Okay. We had four observers on site, and Bob Benda was one of them, and I think he had a question.
Yeah, we were out there, and I think the one thing that we observed was it seemed like at the time we got out there late, so we really didn't get a chance to see the beginning of the test. But it seemed like there was quite a bit of oil or whatever material was coming off had gone beyond the primary containment boom into the second containment boom, and then there was a flume coming off of the second containment boom off to the northwest in the water. Yeah.
Underwater?
Pardon?
Underwater?
Depending on who was looking at it, quite a few people were concerned. It did look like it really wasn't on the surface. It actually was below the surface of the water.
In the reference test and in the test yesterday, we had significant silt plumes coming off the beach. And we have videos from the air that show it very clearly. And we'll be sharing that with the R&D committee within the next day. But in both cases, we had silt plumes under the water going out beyond the primary, in some cases beyond the secondary boom. And in both cases, we recovered a lot of oil.
You say you recovered 100 gallons,
mm-hmm.
And what was your numbers from the reference beach?
Reference beach was 6 gallons of skimming. Problem is that that's moose, and we need to do the analytical on it to find out how much is water and how much is oil. We feel that what we recovered yesterday was mostly oil, and we're doing the analytical to find that out. So until we have that information, we can't make a one-for-one comparison.
Okay.
And it's difficult in any case from beach to beach, you know, with different types of oiling to really do that comparison. So we're doing our best to have a shot at it.
And you had mentioned it would be a week before you would have the analytical data?
Have it all together and have a reasonable idea what was going on. Yeah, we sent out the samples yesterday by fast boat as quick as we could to a lab that was waiting. We hope to have it in a matter of 3-4 days. We might get it together and present it to everybody.
Now, this is for sediments and everything, or this is just total petroleum hydrocarbons from the water column?
Total petroleum hydrocarbons.
Okay, I guess that was any assumption. I'd heard it was going to be 24-hour turnaround on that.
We couldn't get it out by aircraft yesterday. Yeah, we couldn't get a lot of the stuff out by aircraft, which we wanted to, so it delayed us a little bit.
Okay, that answers most of my questions.
Any other questions?
This is Ray Morris again. In the pre-plan, what was your intentions in terms of volume that you were going to apply to the beach?
A gallon, 100 square feet. And we had a 100 by 40 test plot, and we applied 40 gallons.
So out of the 40 gallons, and would you subtract that then from the total volume of oil that you recovered by the skimmer from the 100 gallons that you recovered?
It's a fairly light material. We probably lost most of it during the operation.
Wasn't it emulsified or driven into the water column by the jetting action of the...
No, it's a solubilizing action. The agent is mostly a solvent,
mm-hmm.
And after it does its job, a lot of it does evaporate.
Well, we had some television footage that we viewed, and from what I saw, the oil that was
running off of the beach was being driven into the water column by the jetting action of the nozzles of the hoses. And I was just wondering, you know, if that activity may have dispersed it into the water column, and then after it maybe surfaced, you were recovering also some of the light ends from the solvent that was used as the solubilizer on the rocks. We can get into this later. I just, you know, it's too early, I think, for everybody to get conclusions here, but we were interested in getting your first-hand impressions that you felt that it was successful. We had had some reservations, not on the whole entire test, but on some aspects of it.
Yeah,
if we were to draw conclusions now, it might be too early.
Right. I think the aerial videos, when we look at them, will be impressive.
All right. Thank you.
It's difficult from the beach to tell.
And I've been working on the bioremediation project. As you probably heard last week, those of you who were here, Pat Pritchard reported on the test work that was taking place out in Snug Harbor on Night Island. The results of that test were quite interesting. We felt quite encouraged by the results and have gone ahead and started planning for large-scale application of the oleophilic fertilizer. Word of explanation on that: oleophilic means oil-loving. It's a liquid fertilizer that is will stick to the oil and is partly soluble in the oil. It's made by a French company. It's called Inapol EAP22 is the brand name, and in the cold conditions, it kind of looks a little bit like honey. When you warm it up, it looks a little bit like shellac or varnish or something like that. The results that was observed in Snug Harbor were that within about 2 weeks, or a little less than 2 weeks, the surface of the treated beaches showed a discernible cleaning action. They continue to remain clean after about, it's been about 5 weeks now. The cleaning action is working its way down into the beach. The oil is disappearing. You can dig with your bare hands and come up with clean hands down 3 or 4 inches in these beaches. We believe that a lot of the action that's taking place is biodegradation of the oil, although there's an awful lot of analytical work that still has to be done to determine exactly how much biodegradation is taking place and all the mechanisms that are involved. This particular material, as it clings to the oil, stays there. It brings nitrogen and phosphorus, which are required by the bacteria, the naturally occurring bacteria that are on the beach, to multiply. Once you get this large multiplication in the bacteria count, then you've got a lot of little bugs there eating away at the oil, and so the biodegradation is accelerated by the increase in the oil-eating bacteria. The material is relatively easy to apply. I say relatively because I spent most of the day pumping a backpack today. It's not that easy, but it's relatively easy. And another the advantage of sticking to the oil, it tends not to be washed out by the tide. It remains in place, it's visibly in place for several days. It apparently stays in place for a lot longer than that based on the analytical data that's coming from the test. We are also considering the use of slow-release water-soluble fertilizers where that might be appropriate. We saw some beaches out in the Gulf of Alaska where that would appear to be the recommended treatment. The beaches that were tested in out in Snug Harbor did not show that with a soluble fertilizer did not show the same cleaning action on the surface. However, there was apparent from the analytical data, it appears to be some biodegradation taking place. Again, more analytical work is required to sort that all out. This water-soluble fertilizer can be applied in many ways. A lot of you are familiar with it on your lawns. You sprinkle it on with a broadcaster or a drop-type sprinkler spreader. It can be applied in briquettes. There are briquettes, a briquetted form that's been sold mostly for fertilizing trees and shrubs. That was the type of material that was used out in Snug Harbor. EPA also obtained some special brick-type material, which was applied out in Snug Harbor. So there's many options available. And when you have a lot of options available, you have a lot of questions that have to be answered, and we're working with the EPA and trying to determine what the best type of material is and the best way of applying it and how effective it will be. Let's talk a little bit about the type of beaches that we see should be applied with, should be fertilized, and therefore are applicable to bioremediation. It's not very good on very heavily oiled beaches. It takes a long time for bacteria to eat their way through heavy, thick layers of oil. So therefore, you're looking for a light to moderately oiled beach or a previously clean beach, so that the oil content is down to a reasonable level. You'd like to have a porous beach. You want to have oxygen to getting into the structure of the beach. You'd like to have the fertilizer to work its way down into the beach, down to where the oil is, and that works best in a porous type structure. An open gravel is ideal for that. Every time the tide comes in and out, it pumps oxygen in and moves the nutrients around, and they seem to go very rapidly. It requires moisture for the process to take place, so you like the tidal action. The tidal action tends to wash away some of the fertilizer, but on the other hand, it keeps the system wet. And except when you're working out there, you like it to rain quite often, because that also helps wet things down. There is a little concern that in the real high beach areas, those that are only touched by tides occasionally, like a storm berm, there may be some problems with having enough moisture getting to the fertilized section of the beach. You have to rely on rain up there, because the tides don't get up that often. And so there's a possibility of drying out might occur. And that is a concern we have. Exxon has been developing a priority list for beaches to be treated. We presented a first pass at that to the Shoreline Committee Monday, and they will be coming back to us tomorrow with their comments on that priority list. It's a getting start list. It'll cover we have a little over 16 miles of beaches identified, and that'll get us going a couple of weeks or so in our operating plan. This list was based on the criteria I just mentioned. It was based on the overall operations plans for cleaning. Obviously, you don't want to lay down fertilizer and then come in and hose the beach down and try and clean off the oil on the surface. So we have to coordinate with the operations plan. We're trying to include both Prince William Sound and the Gulf of Alaska. And we took a tour out there to look at some of those beaches over the weekend, and we found some that looked appropriate for bioremediation. But quite frankly, from what we could see, there was a lot more miles of beach that would be more appropriately treated within Prince William Sound. We have lots of beaches in here. There's some out there. They tend to be more widespread. The oily patches, surface oil patches, are smaller in area. And so this oleophilic fertilizer technique doesn't look like it's going to be quite as good out there. We will, of course, be revising our plans as we learn more about the application, and as the test work continues, we'll learn more about the types of beaches and how they behave under this treatment. The schedule that we're looking at, as was mentioned earlier, is to start applying the fertilizer August 1st. We have 500 metric tons of the oleophilic fertilizer on order. The first shipment should have arrived this morning in Anchorage. Bob, do you have confirmation of that yet?
The plane was delayed. It's tonight.
Okay,
tonight. The shipment will be at 11 o'clock tonight in Anchorage.
All right. We're outfitting a large supply barge, which will provide several days of operating storage of the material. We're also outfitting landing craft that will be used to carry the material and the workers and equipment to the beach. we anticipate that with a August 1st start, we'll have sufficient time to complete the application by demobilization, which is scheduled about the 15th of September. That will require us to cover about 2 miles of beach a day to use up the 500 metric tons that's on order. The 500 metric tons, I should have mentioned, will cover about 70 miles of beach. We think that's about right for the type of beaches that we'll be applying it to. The application technique is to spray it on the beach in a light coating. We can do this in a number of different ways. The all-around will cover any type of terrain approach is the backpack sprayer, and we've got a number of those on hand. They're hand-pumped, or at least the ones that have been used mostly have been hand-pumped, and they work fine. It's just that get a little arm weary after a while. We've been looking at gasoline engine pumped backpacks. They're a little heavier. They're a little bulky to start, but they're a possibility to reduce the labor, increase the productivity. We have a gasoline engine pump, two-wheel pull cart. Looks a little bit like a shopping wagon or the old type that used to pull back from the supermarket or a golf bag cart. It goes over beaches. It's a little cumbersome, bounces around on cobble, but it works. It takes the load off your back and puts it somewhere else, but it will work. We were out testing, adding some fertilizer to a new EPA test site today, and we tested a four-wheel ATV with a spray trailer, and that is absolute joy. It saves an awful lot of work. It can lay down an awful lot of material. It's better controllable on a nice smooth beach. You can lay down a nice smooth coat of fertilizer. You can do it very rapidly. You can do it with very few people and with a very little period of time. The coverage rate that we're shooting for is based on coverage rate that was used in the EPA test, and that was 130 square feet per gallon. And I like to remind people of just how little that is. If you're painting a smooth wall in your home, you get about 400 foot of coverage per gallon of paint. Beaches are not smooth, they're very irregular, and so we're putting down something equivalent to one thick coat or maybe two thin coats of paint on the beach. It's visible when you put it down. It has a slight gelatinous sheen to it. Dark oil suddenly turns glistening black again. The oil that's dull, I should say, turns glistening black, so you can see where you've been. And it makes it fairly easy to lay down a reasonable coat. It has to be laid down at low tide. That limits our working hours. You want to put it on rocks that are not underwater, obviously. You want it to stick to the oil. You want to get to the oil and stick to the oil. And so we have a limited operating window every day, and that cuts into the productivity somewhat. We're looking at application techniques for the water-soluble fertilizer. It depends quite a bit on the amount that has to be laid down, the type of fertilizer that is specified, and the type of beach. On some of the Gulf of Alaska beaches, we felt that because of the very tight structure of the beach, that air and fertilizer would not get down in below the surface, and you'd probably have to go through and rake or scarf up the beach to increase the pores, increase the porosity of the beach to let material get in there. As I mentioned before, we have tied up the world supply of this material. It's made by one manufacturer. He's going full out to produce material for us. And it's a French company, and the French have agreed to forego their August vacation to make this material for us. We have a steady supply coming in between now and the end of August. So So we'll be kept busy trying to put that down on the beaches. Unless we want to get into details of the beaches we've looked at, which I think would probably not be appropriate at this time, I think we'd probably open up to questions.
I do have one question. You're saying approximately you would go 20 miles for outside the sound out of the 70?
That was our guess, yes.
And that'd be 50 in the sound then?
It'd be about 50 in the sound.
And so that would be probably somewhere around 10% of the beaches in the sound then you would apply this to, because I think there's 439 or something impacted beaches.
It's a little less than that, I think, but depends on whose count, but...
Well, I don't know if there's agreement on the counts of miles anyway, but I just want... So we're saying approximately 10% of the beaches you have found suitable for application of bioremediation.
Particularly suitable, available in time, and of course we also have a supply problem with the Interpol fertilizer.
Okay, I just wanted to get the numbers straight. Yeah.
Any others?
If there are no other questions, I'd just like to clarify one thing. I think, as you know, we've been working, Exxon has been working very closely with the EPA on this project, and just want to make it clear that Fred is an Exxon person working with the EPA, making that transition from the science and the technology to the real world and the application to the shoreline, just in case that didn't come across clearly at the beginning.
Okay, that concludes the Exxon report. Let's go to ADEC. Ray?
Well, thank you. Since I got here the earliest, I guess I'll be the one to introduce my on-scene coordinator, Steve Provand. He was delayed getting in because of helicopter problems. And getting you, Admiral Robbins and Bill Rainey. It's nice to be here in a nice big room like this. This is the first time I've been here. I was on leave last time that you had your ops meeting. Great. Nice place to have a meeting. The ADEC has been working very hard on shoreline mapping, trying to bring our system into line with those that are already in existence. Ours came on first and is using a digitalized system whereby the shoreline can be read by the computer in terms of distance. Very accurately. Our mapping unit has discovered, however, that there are some discrepancies, and they've been working those out and have found that there's been tremendous cooperation between the Coast Guard, who has the Cameo system, and Exxon's mapping system. And those discrepancies are being worked out on a daily basis, exchanging information without any slips to sign or anything. We're finding that very, very useful to us. And as the sheets are now being printed, we're finding more reason to get together on this. So I think that the two systems, when they're finally, or the three systems, when they're finally ending up with final product, will give us really good basis to delineate beaches that have been cleaned versus those that still need to have treatment.
Good.
The Kodiak area came up with a mapping system that we've just received, and we're quite encouraged to be working with the Kodiak Borough engineering personnel, and also we find that the SCAT team information that's going into that map has been quite useful to us already. And it gets down to quite good detail. We have Roxanne Peterson with us this evening. I don't know if we've covered it all or not, but I would invite you to come forward, Roxanne, if you have anything you'd care to add. She's a technician that's directly involved in the mapping, and you might fill in on what I've left out.
Thank you. I think it's important, one of the reasons this is such an important item is that we have a discrepancy between the mileage that each of us are reporting, and it's, it doesn't confuse us, but it confuses everybody else. So we're trying to get them so they're all alike.
The boom may be overly used in certain areas, and there were some impacts on, again, the intertidal areas. And so the ISDC right now are working on providing guidelines, but what we've got to do is get a response from Exxon detailing to us the operating characteristics. We're not sure exactly what can and cannot be controlled on the Omni booms, which are a very efficient way to clean oil, and they are very good in certain instances such as vertical faces and inaccessible areas where crews can't go in. So these will again be, as soon as we get those operating characteristics, we may be able to then formulate some guidelines, and these could be included in the shoreline treatment manual, which is the ongoing manual that we keep revising every so often for use out in the sound. And I think it also is looked at in the outside the sound. The other item we have, we talked last week about set-asides, and set-asides are areas that we're going to be set aside for long-term research on the fate and effect of oil or the recovery from different organisms in the sound and outside the sound. Exxon had submitted 11 set-asides, and we reviewed them. And on Friday, we had a state position on which set-asides we thought we might be able to approve. Exxon has subsequently withdrawn the set-aside proposal and for future research on shoreline impacts and long-term recovery. And this was in a memo of, to the ISCC on July 22nd. So those have been withdrawn. Basically what happened was Exxon had agreed to fund the studies and make the data available, but they removed their prior commitment, which we had considered when we were doing the set-aside considerations, to treat the sites and remove any contamination at the conclusion of the studies, other than, and basically what they said is they could not commit themselves to do that any longer, and all they would commit themselves to do was to remove the stakes and the boundary signs or something like that. This occurred about 2 days ago after we had come up with a, I think, 7 out of 11 that we said we could set aside. I'm not sure exactly what the status of the set-asides will be now. I think it's still being looked at by other agencies. And anybody have any questions?
Yeah, that's one thing. And secondly, regarding the set-aside, I believe that NOAA will request us to sponsor the set-aside beginning tomorrow sometime. We have some problems with the state's policy requiring that those sites be cleaned up at some point in the future. We would like to follow the sites over a very long period of time, perhaps decades if the oil were to remain that long. And I think that at that point, say 10 years from now, what little oil remains, it would be very difficult to get in there and try to clean it up if it did remain. And so in our letter requesting it, we'll ask for the permanent set-aside of those sites.
Well, as I said, I'm reporting the information that we've got to date on the set-asides, and this is the information that we have available. We have not seen a letter from NOAA or anybody else requesting the set-asides. I know that this is, again, being discussed, but at the present time, we haven't seen it, so we really can't consider any. Right now, we have to consider that all of them have been withdrawn because Exxon has requested they be withdrawn for the reasons I listed.
I'd just like to make a couple of comments. As the Exxon person who was allegedly castigated, Bob mentioned before, a couple of things. Unfortunately, the language in that proposal that was tabled with the Shoreline Committee did not reflect the position that Exxon management had taken before that document was tabled. And it was a miscommunication internally, and we did not see the document before it was sent to the Shoreline Committee. And we later amended it. So if we caused any inconvenience or misunderstanding, we apologize for that. But our position on the cleanup of the sites is clear, and we cannot commit to future cleanup of a site not knowing what that means at this time.
Do I understand you to say, though, that you would be interested in doing this study if it weren't for that commitment yet?
That's correct, Admiral.
I think we ought to be able to find a way to work through that problem so that it can go ahead. I will be discussing that further, but I think it would be a shame to lose the opportunity to study those areas. They're very small. We're only talking about something less than a half a mile total. We need to know better what kind of procedures to use when we clean a beach area, what the eventual impact is, what it is if we leave it alone. And I just think that we would be derelict in our duties if we didn't do something so that the next 15 years shows more progress than the last 15 years.
Admiral, could I ask Ann one more thing? If the state requires that those sites be cleaned up, let's say 3 years into the study, and we followed it for that length of time, and we have an active research group working on it, I think, again, we would have put a lot of investment into it. A lot of scientific effort would have gone into it. People would like to follow these sites over a long, long period of time in the event the oil stays there. And it would be, again, a real shame if we're required at some point in the near future to go in and clean them up. I think that the amount of oil bleeding from these sites, if any, into the future would be minimal. And again, the requirement, the state's requirement that those sites be cleaned up in some near-term future is just doesn't make too much sense.
Maybe I could, I would just like to add a comment to that, because what you're talking about, we had worked extremely hard Thursday, the three state agencies, the Department of Natural Resources, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Environmental Conservation. And we had to go through our Attorney General and everything else to, in fact, legally be able to allow areas not to be treated. Because there either fact is a law that says that when the oil is spilled, it has to be treated immediately. In order to do that, we had to have Exxon submit to DEC a scientific permit, which would allow us to have them discharge oil for a long-term span of time, which would be the oil coming off the shores if, in fact, they would quote-unquote bleed, as we always talk about. This, again, was just a matter, and it was explained at the committee that we were not looking to close down anything. We were just saying this had to be done in order to facilitate us to legally be able to have a set-aside. And that's essentially what was presented, and it was changed at that time at the meeting that this could no longer be committed to. And it was brought up that this was decided about 2 days before the meeting, I guess.
Well, now we have this complex of requirements that results in the fact that we don't have an application now, and those sites, I assume, will be cleaned up in the next not-too-distant future.
I might also add, one of the committees we were also trying to see, as Exxon has done in the past, they did forward to the committee, and this was forwarded to the FOSC, Admiral Robbins, for a delay on these. And this, in fact, has been considered. For one, delay was granted for LA 15, which is an area on Latouche Island. And we had suggested at one day that they, in fact, try and put in the delay request for all of them. But what it meant was that if they were not approved, they would have to commit to at least come back and clean those areas before the termination of summer activities. And so, again, there was an avenue in which they could have literally asked for a delay on all of these things, and they would have been probably considered and recommended to be delayed.
Okay, I think we'll end it here. I will say that I find it kind of strange to be in the position of requesting studies, and then Exxon offers to fund them, and the state says that they've got to get a bunch of permits in order to do something I ask them to do. So let's wait till tomorrow. Let's sit down and see if we can work through this and either kill it or make it live, but I've heard about enough of this. Let's go on.
I assume nobody has any other questions, doesn't it?
Steve's going to discuss shoreline treatment in the Homer area.
Yeah, I guess one thing that is of concern to us, we have a report from our Homer office that the treatment methods being utilized over there are once again going back to manual methods, ineffective use of the personnel, and after the Admiral and I were over there a week ago this last Monday, we thought that an understanding had been reached that some meaningful cleanup was going to take place over there, and apparently that hasn't occurred, and we would really like to see something get going over there and you know, really get make effective use of the resources that we have there.
Steve, I'm just not sure where you're getting the information. This is Bill Rainey, Operations Manager. I assume that you just returned from Homer. But I cannot disagree more strongly when you say that all the methods being used at Homer are ineffectual. We put quite an effort over the last week to begin hot water washing out of landing craft at both Seward and Homer. Most of the effort going on right now is in Morning Bay and Seward, where we're training the teams to utilize this Type B equipment. To get started early, we also started in Homer, and we're going to continue training in that area. I learned earlier there was concern on whether or not some of the guidelines that were discussed by Admiral Robbins were actually being implemented, and we traced it down to their ongoing discussions between the Coast Guard and Exxon on the amount of soil to be removed under Type A in some of the areas in Homer. But these are the type of discussions that we have all along, and they're healthy discussions. The actual question was whether or not more oil material was removed than was necessary, not whether or not the treatment was ineffectual. So again, we seem to have different perceptions on what's going on there, but I will point out that we have developed a plan, as Ken Lewis said when he gave our Homer report, to completely finish the Homer area. And we think we can do that in about a month. That includes both Type A and Type B treatment on all remaining areas. That also assumes that bioremediation is approved and the log burning is approved, both of which we're waiting on approval from the state.
Bioremediation, you're waiting on approval from the state for bioremediation? I don't think that's even to that point yet. And I don't think I said all methods, all techniques over there. I said that there was some ineffective use of resources over there as a result of our discussions when we were over there a week ago. And as far as burning permits, I think we'll have some more information on that in a few minutes.